silhouette of the tower beckoning them onward. Long before they cleared the huts, the sounds of centaur war cries filled the air. Slowing, they came around the corner of a large stable and got a look at the temple. "Oh, shit," Duster gasped. The base of the hill writhed with centaurs. Whooping and screaming, they assaulted the slope in droves. The tribesmen had clustered at the top of the hill, surrounding the tower and pouring volleys of arrows downward. Many were afoot, the bodies of their mounts littering the slope and piled at the base. One company of mounted men, no more than 30, valiantly strove to harass the horsecocks with the hit-and-run tactics they had perfected, but were greatly outnumbered. Their horses were flagging, their quivers nearly spent. So far, they were preventing the centaurs from reaching the top, but the defenders would soon be overwhelmed.
"That has to be 100 centaurs," Stoneguts said.
"With as many more attacking the opposite slope, like as not," Gripper added.
"What do we do?"
Duster asked, his eyes wide. Jackal looked at Oates, then Rednail, Colquhoun, and Gripper. All four nodded.
"Dumdor," Jackal said, "take Cairn into one of the huts. Keep him safe."
The mute half-orc nodded and got off Gripper's hog. He went and lifted Cairn gently as able from Duster's saddle. The skull-sower cried out weakly and seemed to pass out. Jackal hoped he had not just died. Hells, they were likely to join him very soon.
"We're going up that hill," Jackal said, directing his words at the group while looking at Duster. Colquhoun drew his scimitar. Oates's tulwar was already in his hand.
"We are going up that hill," Jackal repeated, freeing his borrowed blade. "Ride hard, hit harder, and don't stop until we reach the summit."
"And if we reach the summit," Stonegut challenged, "then what?"
"We go right down the other side," Jackal told him.
"Where just as many horsecocks will be waiting to greet us,"
Stonegut realized with grudging respect, cracking a smile. The thrice clapped Duster heartily on the back.
"Fill your hand, son of perdition. We are going to follow this pretty outcast up the ass of one centaur and down the throat of another."
Duster gave a resigned nod and drew his tulwar. Jackal took point, and the others fanned out in a tight wedge behind him. Oates was at his right, Colquhoun his left. The rumps of over 100 jostling centaurs lay a little more than a thrum shot away. As he kicked Hearth forward, Jackal wondered which one would bring him down. The hog pounded beneath him, quickening his heart, kindling his guts until he wanted to scream, but Jackal kept his teeth clenched, not wanting to alert the enemy. If they were fortunate, the shock of the attack might carry them through. The base of Strava Hill was wide, forcing the tars to spread thin. Jackal just needed to punch through their ranks to gain the slope. After that, it was only a matter of reaching the top before they were overtaken or struck down by errant Unyar arrows. Gripping Hearth's mane tighter, Jackal leaned forward and silently willed him to greater speed. So intent on their prey upon the hill, the centaurs never saw them coming. Swinging his blade viciously, Jackal took the hind legs out from the first one to come within reach, and kept swinging as Hearth burrowed bloodily through. Oates and Colquhoun hit with the force of a gale, widening the gap. Centaurs were crying out in pain and alarm as the hogs shattered their ranks. Another cry went up from the crest of the hill, this one thrown from the throats of the tribesmen, and the arrows began to fall with renewed vengeance. The aim of the Unyars was uncanny, and Jackal rode safely through a maelstrom of shafts that felled only centaurs. The slope lay ahead, but the horsecocks had begun to turn. Spears and roars of challenge rose ahead of the hoof's charge. Jackal did scream now, a wordless, savage cry of defiance. Behind, his brothers added their voices to his, and seven became a horde. Jackal smashed into the bulwark of centaurs, his sword arm whirling.
A woman's face shrieked at him, teeth bared, and he split it with his blade. The coarse weight of a rope struck him in the eyes, the loop of the flung lasso failing to snare him. Spears struck with the fearsomeness of serpents, but he batted them aside and slew their wielders. He felt a great impact beneath his left arm that nearly spilled him from the saddle, but with a growl he righted himself and continued to kill. Slicing one last centaur across the throat, Jackal won through, and Hearth's hooves struck the slope. Arrows fell in a whistling rain as they surged up the hillside, riding over the corpses of man, horse, and the awful pairing of the two. Above, the tower. Behind, the vindictive wails of the enemy. Oates drew even on Jackal's right, his sword blade broken. To the left came Duster. The youth was smiling and looked over to catch Jackal's eye, proud and triumphant. He was still smiling when the lasso fell over his head and jerked him savagely out of sight. An overwhelming rage took hold of Jackal. He would not lose a brother to these animals. Commanding Hearth to keep running, Jackal flung his legs up and flipped out of the saddle, his spine rolling along the hog's rump. His boots struck the uneven ground, and he spun, seeing Duster being dragged toward the oncoming horde of frothing centaurs. Jackal gave chase, bounding down the slope. He dove and slashed, parting the cord. Duster's limp form came to a rough stop as Jackal rolled to his feet between the young blood and the howling wave of tars. Even charging uphill, their speed was ferocious. Spears and hooves and whirling lassos surged closer. Many in the forefront suddenly reared, arrows appearing to sprout from their bodies. The shafts fell in a storm, but the centaurs merely rode over their fallen and kept coming. But they had been stalled enough. Jackal hoisted Duster across his shoulders and fled up the hill. His legs burning beneath the weight, he slogged up the grade, hoping the arrows of the Unyars could keep the tars at bay long enough for him to reach the top. From the sound of the nearing screams at his back, it was a vain hope. But then his hoof was there, charging past him, back down the hill, the barbarians kicking up grit. Jackal kept running, hearing the sounds of his brethren meeting the centaurs. He gained the top, and the Unyar archers parted to let him through. Zerko was there, his stout sword in hand, commanding the tribesmen with calm resolve. No other halflings were present.
"Your arrival is once again timely, half-orc," the little priest proclaimed.
Ignoring him, Jackal lowered Duster to the ground and whistled for Hearth. He needed to join his hoof, if any still survived. Before he was in the saddle, Oates rode through the gap, followed by Colquhoun. The fang had a gaping wound across his brow and a dripping puncture beneath his ribs, but his eyes had lost none of their untamed luster. There was a long delay, and then Stonegut rode up. His namesake was slick with blood, but none of it appeared to be his. Gripper was on the thrice's heels, Rednail behind him. The old tusker looked dazed and slid from the saddle, shaking his head.
"You're as crazy as a tar," he accused Jackal, though there was a respectful awe in his voice. "Who goes back for a young blood yanked off his hog?"
Jackal swept the hoof with a look.
"Didn't expect you all to be as foolish as me. How were you not slaughtered?"
"We had help," Gripper replied, as a dozen Unyar horsemen came through the line of archers, all that was left of the 30 harriers they had seen defending the base of the hill.
Their wide, slant-eyed faces were smiling, and all looked directly at Jackal. One of them said something, his words foreign and breathless. Ignoring the men, Jackal turned to find Oates.
"Get ready. We need to go down the other side."
His friend's concerned eyes drifted down. Following his gaze, Jackal saw a centaur spear sticking out from under his left arm. With a frustrated snarl, he pulled it free and cast it down upon the ground.
"Gripper, Colquhoun, form up, we're going again. Stonegut!"
"Jackal," Oates said slowly.
"We have to go now,"
Jackal told him, before they recover. Zirko stepped up beside his hog.
There is no need, the halfling said calmly, and cocked his eye at the horizon. Jackal looked and saw the sky was blushing with the beginnings of dawn. Ensconced in the besieged band of night, the betrayer moon waned, returning to a pale crescent. Below, the centaurs were riding off in living currents, back to their ancient shadowy groves and vine-strangled temples. Troops of returning Unyar outriders sped the horsecock's departure with volleys of vengeful arrows.
It is over, Zirko proclaimed.
The surrounding tribesmen continued to marvel at Jackal, and each began repeating the words of the first. The archers on the hill turned and began to gather. One of them plucked the spear that Jackal had removed from his body and held it reverently before punching it aloft.
"Vagara Atukan!" he cried,
and his kindred let loose a victorious cheer. The call was taken up, and the tower reverberated with the chant of the Unyars. Jackal looked down at Zirko.
"What are they saying?"
"They hail you," the priest replied. "They recognize you for what you are."
"And what is he?" Oates asked, his face mirroring Jackal's own confusion.
"The arm of Atukan," Zirko answered solemnly, with a small, pleased smile.
Jackal looked wearily about him. Everywhere were the gleeful faces of the Unyars, men he had never known to smile. Every voice was lifted, every arm was thrust into the air. Whatever exhaustion they felt after so bloody a night, whatever despair was in their hearts at the losses they had suffered, none of it showed as they chanted, saluting Jackal with words and beliefs he did not understand.
"Vagara Atukan! Vagara Atukan! Vagara Atukan!"
Chapter 31. The morning was infused with a rare rain. It fell thinly, not even audible upon the roof of the corral shed. The near-invisible drops brought a chill to the early air, summoned, it seemed, by the funerary song of the Unyars. Jackal sat listening to their voices, carried on the damp breeze for some time now. Somewhere, out of sight, the tribesmen buried their dead, entombing the warriors within Strava Hill, the women and children entrusted to familial mounds. The half-orcs had not been invited to attend, all offers of aid denied. They were given food and a place to rest, but Jackal had been unable to sleep, unlike the rest, who slumbered around him. At his side, Oates snored softly, despite the singing, his head pillowed by a bedroll. Even Colquhoun slept, sitting upright in a corner of the shed. Rednail had stirred long enough to walk stiff-legged out into the rain for a piss, then immediately returned to his blanket. Stonegut was the first to fully rouse, and sauntered out into the corral while finishing off the contents of a milk jar. Jackal was anxious to ride, but Hearth was in need of a decent rest. He lay out in the corral, huddled beneath the low roof of a foaling pen with the other barbarians. Stonegut barked a curse when he discovered his hog had been bullied out from beneath the shelter by Ugfuck. The paunchy thrice saddled his drenched mount in a frustrated hurry, and rode away without so much as a parting glance. Eyes still closed, Oates smiled widely, and went back to sleep. Jackal bid the surly orc-stain a silent riddance with a grin. This was the way of the hoofs at Strava. You stood, you fought, and, if you survived, you left. Duty done. Depending on the number of riders sworn to the stains, Stonegut would not have to spend another betrayer here for years to come. Jackal envied him that comfort. The singing wore on. The swath of sunlight behind the seamless gray of watery clouds spread across the sky. By noon, the dirge had ceased,
but the rain fell on, aging the day. At the back of the shed, Gripper and Dumdor were stirring. Looking down, Jackal saw that Oates was awake. He lay on his back, but his head was turned, his eyes fixed upon Jackal's ribs.
"See, that's already closed," the big thrice said, quietly.
Raising his arm, Jackal inspected the spot where the centaur spear had pierced him. It had been a deep wound, though he had felt no pain. Now, it was nothing but a slightly ragged puckering of the skin. Oates sat up, grunting out a long breath and shaking his head, communicating a litany of opinions without a word.
"We need to saddle up," Jackal told him, handing over the last heel of bread.
"To the kiln?"
Oates asked, his mouth full.
Jackal nodded. "I set out to warn Fetch about the Sludge Man, and that's what I'm going to do."
It was probably far too late, but he left that unsaid. Oates gave voice to the fear anyway.
"Sludge Man could have already been there and left, brother."
The look on the thrice's face reflected what they both knew but would not utter. The Sludge Man was capable of killing everyone within the kiln, and all of Winsome would have been lodged in the fortress due to the Betrayer Moon. Beryl, Thistle, Sissy, the orphans? None of them would be safe from the Bog Trotter. The only person Jackal knew with the power to stand against the Sludge Man was Crafty, but trust in the wizard was a knife that cut both ways.
"I need to see for myself," Jackal said. "And so do you."
The set of Oates's bearded jaw was all the agreement needed. They stood at the same time and began gathering their gear.
"Do best, Markul."
Jackal shot a look over at Colquhoun and saw he was awake too. His eyes were cocked and staring out across the corral. Jackal followed his gaze and found Zirko approaching through the spitting rain. The high priest was alone, his short steps tired. Arriving under the eaves of the shed, the halfling wiped the wet from his face and looked up.
"I trust you have managed some rest?"
he asked the gathering half-orcs.
"We have, thankfully," Gripper answered, stepping forward. "How are Cairn and Duster?"
"I tended them," Zirko replied. "But Cairn could not be saved. I am sorry. The younger one was more fortunate. He remains unconscious, though I believe he will wake. Some of my most skilled priests are with him, and I have sent a bird to the Sons of Perdition, telling them of their brother's injury. Another I sent to the Skull Sowers to inform them of their loss."
"And what about Pitts?" Rednail snarled, a knee popping as he rose from the ground. "Did you find any sign of that craven shit?"
"Or Slivers?" Gripper added.
Zirko inclined his head gravely.
"My riders found the shard slain. The centaurs had torn him asunder, so there is little left for his hoof to retrieve. His mount was found alive and will be brought here to use as you please. Of the free rider, there is no sign."
Rednail gave a grunt of grim satisfaction. "Well," Gripper waved a thumb between himself and Dumdor, "if none of you object, my mute friend will claim the shard's barbarian and we'll be on our way. Any who want to ride with us are welcome."
Jackal knew the offer was directed at him, but merely clapped his fellow nomad on the shoulder in a respectful farewell.
As the free riders maneuvered out of the shed, Rednail looked to Zirko.
"I trust the Tusked Tide will receive warning of the next betrayer."
"Of course," the priest promised solemnly. "Ride with the blessings of Great Bellico."
Stepping past the halfling, Rednail followed the nomads into the rain. Colquhoun continued to sit in his corner, watching Jackal, Oates, and Zirko with naked interest.
"I hope your losses weren't great," Jackal told the little priest.
Zirko bowed slightly, folding his hands before him.
"Greater than some moons, yet fewer than most. Bellico will receive many faithful this morn,
borne to his side on the voices of we who live to await the master slave's return.
The way those frails were carrying on at dawn, Oates grumbled. I'm surprised half of them aren't here trying to give Jackal their daughters.
Jackal gave his friend a horrified look, but Zirko was smiling. The Unyars have witnessed many of the gods' gifts throughout the generations and celebrate their arrival, yet will always remain an insular folk. Even we halflings live apart from them.
Oates scratched at his bald head. So, if Duster lives, he going to be some unkillable loon brain like Jackal?
Abandoning the scathing looks, Jackal slapped the thrice across the shoulder.
The fuck is wrong with you? Oates shrugged. You weren't going to ask.
Colquhoun was chuckling silently in his corner. Zirko's face, however, lost its smile.
Atukan was a great warrior in life, the halfling said. But death claimed him, as it did all of Bellico's loyal sworn men.
The priest's cunning black face settled on Jackal and grasped his attention.
Do not mistake gifts for miracles, half-orc. You carry a soul within you favored by a god, but your own is still there and can be torn from life. It is difficult to blow out a candle that resides behind a roaring waterfall.
Difficult, but not impossible.
He's saying you're not invulnerable, Oates said, out the side of his mouth.
I fucking heard him, Jackal groused.
Just making sure.
Jackal looked boldly down at the High Priest.
If you and your god are done with me, Hero Father, I have matters to settle.
He had tried to bury the bitterness in his voice, but it scuttled to the surface nonetheless.
Of course, Zirko said. Until the next betrayer moon.
The sword Jackal had borrowed was propped against the wall. He pointed it out to Zirko with a lift of his chin. Could you see that gets back to its owner? All the Unyars look the same to me.
Keep it, the halfling told him. The look in your eye tells me you will soon have need of it.
My thanks. Shouldering his saddle and taking up the blade, Jackal left the shed, Oates following. Colquhoun unfolded from his corner and came with them. Outside the folding pen, Gripper and Dumdor were already mounted, the mute having adopted Pitz's mount. Rednail was giving his hog's girth strap a final tug.
Where are you bound? The grizzled Tusker asked.
The kiln, Jackal told him simply.
That wise? Gripper asked. You know your life is forfeit if you set foot on your former hoof's lot.
Jackal slung his saddle over Hearth's back. We don't have a choice. Gripper, if you see Warbler, tell him I was here at Strava and where I went after. Spread the message to any nomads you meet.
I will.
Rednail winced as he climbed atop his hog.
Luck to you, boys. Hopefully I'll be dead before my turn here comes up again, old as I am. But if you find yourselves on Tidelands, you will be welcome at the Wallow. I will vouch for you.
Our thanks, Gripper said, smiling as he hooked a thumb at Dumdor. Though this one is likely to have trouble saying who... The nomad ceased speaking, his attention suddenly drawn by something that caused him to frown. Looking over his shoulder, Jackal saw a group of Unyar horsemen swiftly approaching. There were 10 of them, surrounding a lone half-orc on a barbarian.
Is that... Oates began.
Slivers, Gripper confirmed. The frailing was escorted into the corral, and the horsemen reined up, their leader breaking away and trotting toward Zirko. The little priest listened to a quick report, then pointed at Jackal and the others. At a bellowed command, the horsemen allowed Slivers to ride up to the folding pen. His face was tight and worried.
They catch you stealing a goat? Rednail accused.
Slivers shook his head and tried to speak, but his throat only croaked wordlessly. Gripper tossed him a water skin. As he drank, Zirko and the Unyar leader came up.
"My men tell me you have spotted orcs nearby," the halfling said, looking intently at Slivers.
Oates grunted out a laugh.
"You run to save your hide from centaurs, then come running right back at the sight of an Ulyud. Hell's mongrel, you got any balls left?"
Slivers tore the skin away from his panting, dripping mouth.
Not an Ulyud."
Everyone stilled, all eyes locking upon the spooked frailing.
"How many?" Rednail asked.
Slivers gave a searching shrug, mouth agape.
"More thicks than I've ever seen."
"How far?" Zirko demanded.
"Not 10 leagues east."
The halfling was implacable. "Are they coming this way?" Slivers shook his head.
"North. They're moving north."
Zirko gave a string of commands to the Unyar rider in the tribesman's own tongue, sending him riding away immediately.
"You will lead my men to have a look," the little priest said, in a voice that allowed no chance for denial.
"And us,"
Gripper said, as Dumdor gave a solid nod.
"I would see them too," Rednail declared.
Jackal and Oates shared a look that agreed the kiln would have to wait. 200 horsemen were assembled at the base of the hill. A swift war chariot drawn by a pair of horses waited at the head of the column. The Unyar driver bowed as Zirko mounted the conveyance, stepping up onto a platform that allowed the halfling to stand equal to the man. The little priest motioned the men to ride. Slivers was placed in the lead, while Jackal and the other half-orcs formed up around him. Strava dwindled behind them in a storm of thundering hooves. For all the jabs at his bravery, Slivers was an experienced rider and led the troop hard to the northeast. Not knowing the numbers of the orcs made this a scouting run. Catching up without overtaking was the goal. The Unyar horses were a hardy breed, but some care had to be taken when leading them. Barbarians were slower, but the hogs could traverse ground that could prove treacherous for a horse. Slivers kept this in mind as he guided the column through scrubby flats and dry gulches, avoiding the rocks and hardscrabble. The pitiful rain was transformed into swift sheets of tickling mites by the speed of the ride. It was not long before they came upon the orcs' tracks. The damp dust was churned into weak mud, carelessly sculpted by heavy footprints. Zirko called a halt and ordered 4 outriders to proceed ahead. Colquhoun jumped down and studied the tracks, his face etched with concentration.
"How many?" Jackal asked.
But the Fang only frowned and remounted without answering.
"Well, that's unsettling," Oates complained.
The Unyar outriders were not long in returning. Jackal and the others watched intently as they reported to Zirko in low, foreign voices. The halfling's face was grim. The tribesman's report ended quickly, and, after a moment's consideration, Zirko stepped down from the chariot and allowed the driver to help him up onto one of the outriders' saddles. The high priest's bearing was undented, even sitting a horse in front of its rider like a child. The scouts approached the half-orcs, and Zirko gave them all a look.
"Come."
Without waiting for a response, Zirko commanded his 4 riders onward, leaving the barbarians to fall in behind. 4 horses and 7 hogs made their way slowly over the orc tracks until the Unyars diverted after half a league. The ground folded uphill, rocky shelves jutting from the creases. The way grew difficult as the boulders began to hold dominion over the scrub. To the left, the rain-darkened flats lay down a rugged slope. Picking their way through the rocks, the riders skirted the lower ground, the black line of orc passage still visible. Soon, they caught up to the marching mass leaving that dark trail.
"Damn all the hells," Rednail growled as they reined up on a stony overlook.
Looking down, they watched the long, dense column of dark-limbed shapes pass. They were only a little beyond Thrumshot, close enough to see the scimitars in their hands, see them turn their gazes uphill to watch their watchers. Close enough to begin a count. What is that, 200? Gripper guessed. Dumdor held up 3 correcting fingers.
Shaft my ass, Oates said. The hells are they playing at? There is nothing around here but the Rudder's old lot. It's abandoned for miles. There's nothing to take, no one to kill.
Jackal's spine went cold. And no one to report their movements.
Well, we see them, Slivers said. We weren't supposed to, Jackal told him. They came close to Strava but did not attack. They're making directly for Rudder land, land they know to be empty. Look, they see us and are doing nothing.
It was true. No raiders were detaching from the main body. No attempts were made to rush the slope. The Fix just continued their mile-eating pace, hungrily intent on the northern horizon. They are going to Hisparfa, Jackal realized aloud. He felt the stares settle. The others frowned at him, all but Zirko and Colquhoun, who both continued to watch the orcs. Slivers was the first to scoff.
Let them! Hisparfa can handle 300 orcs!
Be good for them to fight for once, Gripper agreed. Oates was studying Jackal's face.
What are you thinking, brother?
Jackal only shook his head, a head filled with a whirling mass of disturbed thoughts.
It's another incursion.
It was not Jackal who had answered, though the words reflected those in his mind. All looked at Zirko. The halfling continued to gaze at the swiftly passing tail of the orc column.
No offense, priest, Rednail said, but that is far from an incursion. I saw it the first time, and there were a heap more thicks than those down there.
I was there too, Zirko replied. This is simply the beginning.
That's hog shit, Slivers declared airily.
No, the halfling is right, Colquhoun said,
surprising all but Jackal and Oates with his use of his Spartan.
That down there is an Ulasun, a tongue. It has come to taste the enemy's blood, test the courage of those they mean to devour.
So we cut off the tongue, Oates said. Surely we got enough Unyars back there to get it done if we hit hard and run harder, again and again, until the orcs got more feathers than a buzzard. Fix won't find blood so delicious when it's their own.
That will be a decision for the Hero Father, Colquhoun replied. But killing these only ends one Ulasun. The orcs never taste just one dish. They will be lapping at Hisparfa with a pronged tongue. 3 at the least.
Oates ran an aggravated hand through his beard.
You saying we got close to 1,000 orcs moving through the lots?
Colquhoun looked squarely at the thrice.
Again, at the least. All probing, all preparing for what comes behind.
And what's that?
The teeth, Jackal answered. Dulvmahar, Colquhoun agreed with a nod. 40,000 orcs.
The 300 below were dwindling, while every mind on the ridge tried to imagine them swelled to such a force. There was a long silence. The tide pool in Jackal's head began to settle, and nightmarish bits rose to float upon the surface. The details were loathsome, but now that they lay still, he found them easier to sift. Jackal studied the bloated remnants of long, rotting questions and found the drifting answers incapable of escape.
He sent them.
Jackal had barely whispered, had not meant to even speak aloud.
Jack? Oates pressed.
Shaking out of his dark musings, Jackal met his friend's concerned frown.
Crafty, he said, knowing the others would not understand and refusing to care.
He wants to rule Hisparfa. To do that, he has to conquer it. He would need an army. Jackal extended an arm at the backs of the orc war band.
There it is. He doesn't need to do a damn thing to bring the kingdom to its knees, except allow the orcs to pass. Another incursion will likely end Hisparfa, especially if the lots do nothing to stall the advance. I don't follow all your raving, boy, Rednail grumbled. But these days, all the hoofs riding together would be hard-pressed to stop just one of those Ulusun, to say naught of 40,000. A second incursion was never within our power to stop, even at our height.
You're wrong, Jackal told the aging Tusker. In the early years, any of the 9 hoofs could have done it, and done it alone. Tell me, Rednail, tell me you didn't have a rider in the Tusk Tide years ago, one twisted from the plague. Some tough mongrel who endured weeping sores and swollen joints long after he should have been dead. Rednail wore a perplexed expression.
Yeah, called him Quicklime.
Jackal looked to Colquhoun. What about in the fangs of our fathers? The savage mongrel thought briefly, then gave a quick nod.
Before I was cast out of the shards, Slivers recalled slowly, the old-timers used to talk about some poxy brother they used to ride with. Said he hung himself one day.
Every hoof had one, Jackal said. A plague-bearer from the days of the incursion. They were what kept the fix from returning, from trying again. Not the hoofs, just 9 tortured mongrels. Now, there is only one left.
The fucking Claymaster, Oates rumbled.
And Crafty's got him hiding behind the walls of the kiln, Jackal said. That's why he was so intent on the Grey Bastards. Our chief was the last thing the Fix feared, the best weapon against them. And now, at a wizard's insistence, the Claymaster is going to stay away. The orcs will march unchallenged across Ulwundulas. Maybe Hisparta can repel them, maybe not, but it doesn't matter. They will be weakened, and Crafty will set his fat ass on the throne.
Oates made an apologetic face.
Might not be a bad thing, Jack, having one of us as king.
This wizard's a half-orc? Slivers gawked. Hells, why aren't we helping him?
Jackal opened his mouth to respond, but faltered. He had feared that reaction, and been unprepared with a counter. It was Zirko who provided one.
History is littered with the tyranny of sorcerer kings, the priest intoned. I have beheld this wizard, and, though I believe he masked some of his potency, I can tell you he serves greater masters.
Jackal recalled the vile Abzul's words in the Castile Tower. The Black Womb. The looks he received showed none were familiar. That ignorance quickly turned to disquiet.
I tell you, Zirko went on, this is not one you wish to see wear a crown. That he has made allies with Dargest is enough for me to oppose him. I believe Jackal has the right of it. More, I think this wizard used the Betrayer Moon as a signal, one the orcs would be certain to see.
Further realization dawned at the halfling's words. The lots are practically empty, Jackal said to Zirko. All the hoofs hold up. Free riders hiding. Your own horsemen drawn close to Strava. All the orcs need to do is use the most remote stretches in a land already made sparse by the centaurs.
Like the Rudder's lot, Gripper offered.
The old maiden, too, I wager, Rednail added.
Jackal felt as if a nauseating fist drove his fruits into his gut. Hells, the Fix had always favored the marsh for entry into the lots. The only thing there to oppose them was the occasional roke and the cursed sludge man, a man Crafty had made a point to eliminate, a man who, even now, had vacated his precious home in order to assault the very walls the wizard now dwelt behind. Jackal had thought Crafty wanted to rid himself of a potential rival, but it was possible he was simply trying to open another road for the orcs to tread without restraint. By seeking the sludge man's help, Jackal had unknowingly aided Crafty's plan, putting Fetch, Warbler, Starling, and the other captives in danger with the same folly.
This has to end, Jackal said,
his private rage honing his voice.
A 1,000 orcs? Sliver reminded him. Coming in from, we're fucking guessing where, with 40 times that number right on their heels? How are we supposed to end that?
Jackal looked at Zirko.
You going to let this Ulusun live? The high priest of Bellico shook his head.
None will return to Dargest.
That's one tongue, Gripper said with an approving smile. Red Nail is right, Jackal decided. Another will be coming through the Old Maiden, but they will be the slowest. Gripper, if you can warn the Castile, they might have a chance to muster enough cavaleros. At the very least, they can get word to Hisparta. I think Crafty planned to have the Castile's wizard on his side. Probably have the mad fuck murder the garrison. But seeing as he is now dead, we may have a chance of getting the Frails in this fight. Captain Bermudo won't want to speak to you, and he won't believe you. Force him to do both. And don't talk to Captain Ignacio. He's too entwined with the Claymaster to be trusted.
That leaves one Ulusun, Rednail muttered. If we're lucky.
And we are not going to be, Jackal said. I would wager the Fix are sending in more than we want to think about. There could be 10 tongues out there. If there are, we need to know. Rednail, Calhoun, you need to get back to your hoofs, warn them of what's coming. We need riders ranging the lots, so we know where the tongues are, and when and where the damn teeth are coming from. Slivers, go to the Skull Sowers. Dumdor, to the Sons of Perdition. Can you make them understand you?
The big mute gave a nod that promised mountains.
Good. We can only hope that Stonegut sees some of this and tells the Orcstains.
Jackal, Oates put in. That leaves the Shards and the Cauldron Brotherhood in the dark.
Pick one, Jackal told him. That's where you are going.
And you're taking the other? Oates asked, doubtful.
I'm going to the Kiln.
Then fuck if I'm not going with you.
What good is warning the bastards anyway? Slivers put in. If you're right about this, they know all about it.
I'm not going to warn them, Jackal replied. I am going so I can drag the Claymaster out of his hole and ram his swollen carcass down the throat of the orcs. The plague is our only chance to stop this. If the Fix discover it's being used again, this incursion might end before it begins.
Our only chance, Oates repeated gruffly. Doesn't sound like something we should trust to just one rider, even if that rider is you.
I'm going. And me, Gripper said. The Thrice is right. You will need help. Slivers can ride to the Castile.
Fuck that, the smaller half-orc said. I'm going with you boys.
Jackal grit his teeth, distracted by Zirko whispering briefly to the Unyars before two of the scouts rode off. He took a deep breath.
We don't have the numbers. The Castile and the other hoofs must be warned.
And they will be, Zirko told him. Those riders go with all haste back to Strava. They will have my priests send birds across the lots. Messages will reach every stronghold before any of you. Messages that will be believed, as they will bear my name.
Oates grinned triumphantly.
See there? Little Waddler's right fucking useful. I'm going.
Yeah, Rednail said. What about your hoof? Jackal asked.
The older half-orc frowned.
Seems the best way I can help them is to help you.
Jackal turned to look at Calhoun.
You coming too?
The fang's eyes gleamed.
Sulmahuk tulgest tuhuruk.
That's what I thought, Jackal said with a small laugh. He gave Calhoun an appraising look. The orcs have no word for saddle. That means the fangs of our fathers must have a different creed than the rest of us.
Thrul sul suvash, gzul ufkul,
Calhoun recited, lifting his chest. Jackal looked gravely at the six mongrels choosing to ride with him.
You heard him, brothers. Live in the battle, die in a fury.
Chapter 32. The glow from the top of the kiln's chimney was evil. Visible from over a league, a green eldritch light flickered and winked, a disturbing eye mounted upon a stalk of stone. Smoke drenched the sky above, flooding the night with a dense, living blackness. The stars were drowned, the pale corpse of the moon bobbing just beneath the surface. Jackal and his riders gazed at the fortress. Someone breathed a curse.
Never seen it lit, Slivers said. Does it always look like that?
Jackal shared a dark look with Oates.
No,
the thrice answered. No doubt the ovens have burned continuously since before the betrayer, Jackal said. They've exhausted their timber.
Then what, they're using that alchemist shit that Mead's been mucking with? Alunan fire?
Rednail asked, his face troubled. Jackal could only nod.
I thought it burned too hot, Oates grumbled. Mead couldn't manage it.
It's crafty, Jackal said. If anyone knows the secret to that eastern substance, it's him. And it is him. Together, the makeshift hoof gazed at the hunkered shadow of the fortress as the eerie light belched a steady torrent of smoke. They had ridden through the day and into the night, halting scarcely and briefly, ever watchful for orcs. Fortunately, they saw no more Alusoons, nor any sign of their passage. It was cold comfort. They were out there, somewhere, but not knowing their roads of invasion was the least of Jackal's worries. There had been plenty of time to think during the long ride, hours in the saddle yielding a simple plan, one that was easily communicated to the others during their fleeting rests. Yet that plan was nearly crushed by doubt when the kiln came into view. Jackal had expected the stronghold to be closed to him, but the sight of that green, unnatural glow made his former home something sorcerous and unreachable. Getting inside was always going to be difficult, but now it seemed impossible. Gritting his teeth against a rising outcry, Jackal inwardly cursed Crafty's keen mind. The wizard had sealed himself up in the most imposing fortification in the lots, and bolstered its defenses with his arts. Immured with him was the only living being the orcs feared. By keeping the Claymaster close, Crafty gave the Fix free rein to march across Ulwandulas, while also ensuring they did not attempt to murder him on their way to do his bloody work. All he need do was sit on his broad rump and wait until his Spartha was in ruins.
Tuhuruk!
Colquhoun's voice pulled Jackal out of his brooding. He found the others staring at him expectantly. You know what to do, Jackal told them. Rednail and Colquhoun nodded and spurred their hogs toward the kiln without another question. Jackal led the rest to Winsome. The small village was deserted. A sleepy stray goat and a few errant geese were all that remained. The buildings were dark and shuttered, the homes vacant and quietly foreboding. Jackal had seen Winsome sleep many times over the years, but this was the first time he had seen it dead. The sight was unsettling, though far from unexpected. It was now nearly 2 days since the betrayer. The villagers should have already returned, but Crafty and the Claymaster knew the orcs were coming. They were keeping everyone safe in the kiln until the Fix moved through. That's why the chief wouldn't allow a rider to go to Strava. No way for them to get back. Going to the mule skinner's empty stables, Jackal dismounted and allowed Hearth to root around in the old straw for a moment. Oates did the same, but Gripper, Slivers, and Dumdor remained on their hogs. Tie Ugg up, Jackal told Oates, quickly securing Hearth as he spoke. This close to home, they are likely to follow. Oates did as instructed, before removing one quiver from his harness and hanging it off his belt. Securing his own weapons, Jackal swung up behind Gripper. Oates rode double with Dumdor. They left Winsome as quickly as they had come, keeping to the track leading to the kiln for mere heartbeats, before Jackal wordlessly guided Gripper into the scrub. They approached the fortress from the northeast, close to the top curve of the oval. Jackal signaled a halt several furlongs from the wall. The hogback was still half-raised, the ramp sticking up vertically above the parapet. Jackal pointed and whispered a reminder in Gripper's ear. When you see that, come down. The nomad gave a confirming grunt, and Jackal dismounted. Oates was already on the ground, crouched and ready.
Lead the way, brother, he rumbled quietly.
Bent nearly double, They scurried toward the walls, creeping between the shadows of boulder and scrub. Their swords were sheathed, their stockbows slung. They made for the kiln, as furtive as cutthroats. Just out of thrumshot, Jackal paused. He could see the heavy shape of the orc assassin he had killed still affixed to the raised hogback. Other silhouettes moved behind the parapet, fewer than Jackal had expected. Usually, the hogback was the most heavily defended section of the walls, but there seemed to be only a handful of guards. Still, this was not the place for an ascent. Jackal had simply wanted to be sure the enchanted corpse of the orc was not going to scream a warning at their approach. When all remained silent, they continued on. They went no closer to the walls, but snuck along, following the curve around to the west. Hunkering down in the scrub, Jackal and Oates waited, listening. Unseen, on the opposite side of the kiln, Colquhoun and Rednail would have reached the gatehouse by now. Their task was to hail the sentries and simply tell the truth. Orcs were invading the lots, and word needed to be spread. As members of the Tusked Tide and the Fangs of our fathers, the pair would be viewed for what they were, sworn brothers of allied hoofs, riding to the stronghold of the Grey Bastards with dire news. The reaction to that news would be telling. Oates had known nothing of the coming incursion when he left the kiln, and it was likely all within remained ignorant, save Crafty and the chief. Jackal could not imagine his former brothers would consent to such a plan. In truth, he was relying on it. Regardless, word would be brought to the Claymaster about the riders at the gate. They would request shelter for the night and, Jackal suspected, be turned away. This would spark an outrage, one that would necessitate Rednail and Colquhoun shouting abuses at the walls. That would be Oates and Jackal's signal to move. Of course, it was possible that the Claymaster would allow the messenger's entry, in which case the hogback would need to be lowered, signaling Gripper, Slivers, and Dumdore to ride. If a pair of hoof riders were granted entry, then surely a trio of nomads would not be turned away, as long as there were no former bastards amongst them. That would put 5 swords loyal to Jackal within the walls, 5 conspirators that could aid his and Oates's skulking entry with nothing more than a little time, keen wits, and a few distractions. So, they kept their eyes on the hogback and their ears open. A long span passed, and then abrasive voices echoed through the night. Sounded like someone cursing vehemently in Orcish.
"Inhospitable bastards tonight, ain't we?" Oates whispered.
So, the chief was not risking outsiders. That was cautious, which meant he was not wholly confident.
"Let's go," Jackal said in a hush, and sped for the walls, hoping all eyes were turned to the commotion at the far end of the fortress. If not, he may never know it, especially if the slophead on guard was a good shot. Halfway to the wall, Jackal was struck, not by a thrumbolt or a javelin, but by the heat. He was nearly repelled by a stifling, invisible barrier, forcing his eyes closed. He steeled himself, plowing through the air-robbing waves. Somewhere behind him, Oates grunted in surprise and discomfort. The walls of the kiln were designed to be hot when the ovens were lit, the conducting tunnel within being a death trap for any who entered. But this was unlike anything Jackal had known during his years living within the stronghold. Flinching and sweating, he stumbled against the bricks and immediately recoiled to save his flesh. He was amazed the stonework had not begun to crack. Oates appeared beside him, his beard dripping. Mouth agape, the thrice shook his head, denying the possibility of a climb. Setting his jaw against the futility, Jackal snatched the kerchief from his head and tore it into rough halves. Oates watched as he wrapped his hands and followed his example. The thrice also shrugged out of his brigand, leaving him bare-chested like Jackal. Almost as one, they sprang up and grabbed the top of the angled, triangular buttresses that supported the slope of the wall.
Oates growled in his throat, the exclamation no doubt caused by the burning of his exposed fingertips, a pain that Jackal shared. Nevertheless, they each managed to scramble up and anchor themselves within the first row of recessed arches. Oates was now hidden from view, but Jackal could hear his hissing breaths. The arches were too short to allow them to stand upright, but were just deep enough for a balanced crouch. Though his skin was saved contact from the stone, Jackal still suffered the hellish heat. He could feel it cooking through his boots. Licking the tips of his fingers quickly, he grabbed the right edge of the arch and swung out, pushing off the shelf with one foot. At the end of his spring, he managed to catch a fissure in the bricks with his left hand and tried to ignore the sizzling sound. The slope of the wall was less pronounced now, but it aided him enough to reach a second, near-vertical buttress. Seizing either side of the stone support, Jackal crawled ape-like up its length, grinding the balls of his feet into the bricks for purchase. He ground his teeth as his fingers seared. At the end of the buttress, the wall rose straight up for nearly two lengths of Jackal's body. Beyond, the latticework of the palisade beckoned, promising an end to the scorching stone. Accepting the pain, he climbed, his burning hands speeding his ascent. There was no time for care, to search for the next handhold. There was only the need to escape the agonizing touch of the rock. To halt was to burn. The latticework was within reach. Jackal snatched for it, knifing his fingers through the crumbling render to seize the dry wattle beneath. The wood snapped and broke under his weight, but he threw his other hand up, grabbing hold to prevent a plummet. His throbbing fingers entwined blissfully in the rough lattice. Jackal planted his boots into the stone below and held for a moment, looking to his right. Oates, too, clung to the bottom of the palisade, a little more than an arm's length away. The sweating thrice gave him an exasperated look of triumph, a look that quickly fled as his eyes darted up above Jackal and widened. Oates opened his mouth to voice a warning, but forced himself to silence. Looking up, Jackal saw the silhouette of a sentry directly above him, leaning over the parapet. An arm rose, holding a javelin. There was nothing Jackal could do. The shaft of the weapon eased down. Jackal found himself staring at the butt end.
"Grab it!"
an eager voice hissed. Taking hold of the shaft in one hand, Jackal finished the climb, aided by the upward pull of the javelin. Scrambling over the edge of the parapet, he came face to face with a panting slophead. Jackal knew the youth's face. Hells, he knew all their faces, but names were another matter. Hopefuls weren't worth remembering until they had proven themselves. Without a word, the slop went over to help Oates. Glancing about quickly, Jackal saw no sign of any other sentries close by, though the shadowy forms of those clustered by the hogback were distinguishable across the curve. Jackal sat for a moment, putting his back against the parapet and breathing deeply. The heat was easier to take up here away from the radiating stones, but it was still uncomfortable. Small wonder there were fewer guards along the wall. The heat must have forced them to shorter shifts. Oates sank down next to him, gingerly flexing his fingers.
"You all right?"
Jackal whispered.
"Good," Oates grunted.
The slophead came and squatted down in front of them. If he'd had a tail sprouting from his ass crack, it would have been wagging. Jackal studied his face. Finally, it came to him. "You're the slop who came down to Barrels that day."
"Berno?"
"Biro," the youth corrected, though it sounded more like an apology.
"I also saddled Hearth for you when you left with that swaddlehead."
"With the wizard." Jackal nodded, remembering.
"You can call him a swaddlehead, Biro. No harm. Hells, you can call him a fat, backy, Tyrkanian fuckmule for all we care,"
Oates declared. Biro laughed, but the sound of his own mirth seemed to spook him, and he cast quick looks down the parapet.
"Why are you helping us, slop?" Jackal asked, snatching his attention back.
The question confused the youth. He searched for an answer, trying to read one from Jackal's face, but was too timid to look for long. An exile and a deserter climbed